Okay, and then I'm just gonna first to mute yourself.
I mean, it should, but it hasn't started yet.
Okay. Just for my own mental health, I'm making this little cheat sheet for myself so I know the different meetings and all the different logins and stuff. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to type in these long things, so I'll just have to know to go to the document and click on this.
I thought it was muted.
Hey there. Gwen, good to see you. How are folks doing? Hopefully well. Give it a few more minutes for a few more folks to show up, and then we will get started. So, Stephen, hey, Barbara.
Hi.
If you wouldn't mind muting, that would be great, Stephen. For For some reason, it won't let me. Oh, there we go. I can mute people now.
Gwen, it's nice to see you. It's been way too long. Hi, Gwen.
I know. I was excited to see Gwen as well.
Thank you, guys.
How you been?
Oh, I'm tired right now. Very tired. COVID has worn me out.
Say more.
A lot of work out here at Southeast.
I bet. All right, let's give it like 30 more seconds and then we'll go ahead and get started. I think we're looking pretty.
We have a chief quorum.
That's what I was looking for. All right.
Thomas, your poster with the condom and the twinks in the back. I remember that. From the when it came out, I think. I love that one. I thought it was so cute.
It's a timepiece for sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I would love to do, like, if they're still alive. What do they call that when you pose as you did in a previous shot, but you're a few years older? There's a name for it.
I think the Beatles did that in their compilation album.
Say that again, Ron?
I think the Beatles did that in the compilation album.
Oh, yeah?
In the blue, yeah.
Mark, what did you say?
It's nothing new. It's nothing new, Thomas.
I said it's a Facebook challenge.
Oh, there you go. To find them.
I mean, I think it literally was a Facebook challenge.
Oh, yeah, I'm not on the Facebook, so I'm not sure what that means. So thanks for, I don't think I'm old enough for Facebook. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. All right, call the meeting to order. So welcome to the HIV Community Planning Council meeting for February 28th. 2022. We've got a relatively light agenda, so we'll go over that in a minute. But let's review and approve February. Let's do introductions first, our roll call.
All right, I'll jump in here. I'll go with council members first, then guests, then council staff. Chuck Adams.
Here.
Bill Bloom.
Here.
Jack Bowman.
Here.
Ben Kabankin.
Present.
Cesar Cadabes. Ed Chitty.
Here and standing with Ukraine.
Billy Cooper. Zachary Davenport. Elaine Flores is excused. Matt Gelmaker.
Here.
David Gonzalez.
Here.
Kevin Hutchcroft.
Thomas Matt, Noble. This is Bill. Kevin is on leave for a while.
Excused. Thomas Noble.
Present.
Paul Harkin is running late. Ron Hernandez.
I'm present.
Bruce Ito.
Here.
Chris Kent.
Here.
Lee Jewell.
Present.
Juba Kalamka.
Present.
Nale.
Here.
Helen Lin. Derek Mapp. TJ Lee Miyake.
Hi, sorry about that. I was having trouble connecting.
Here. No worries. Thank you, TJ. Jesse Murphy.
Here.
Irma Parada.
Here.
Ken Pierce.
Here.
Gwen Smith.
Here. And JP I have Soto. To leave at 5:30. Is that okay?
Of course. JP Soto is excused. Richard Sullivan.
Here.
Laura Thomas. I know Laura is here because we heard her. So I'm going
to. Sorry, here.
Okay. Hi, Laura.
I was too fast with my mute button.
And just one more run through: Cesar Cadavez, Billy Cooper, Zachary Davenport, Helen Lin. All right. Well, we still have quorum. And now I'll go on the rest of the public. Let's see who we got here. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to just turn my sound to mute. All right. Let's see. Barbara? Oh, you're muted, Barbara.
Okay, Barbara Green, the JUFO Center for AIDS Prevention Studies.
Thanks, Barbara. Sue?
Sue Wahlberg-Smith. I'm the community liaison for Merck & Company.
Right. Let's see who else we have here. Bill?
Bill Hirsch with the AIDS Legal Referral Panel and the HIV AIDS Provider Network.
Mickey. Mickey.
Oh. Hey, hi everyone. My name is Mickey. I work at Maitree Compassionate Care.
Steven.
Steven Spano, the HCAP staff attorney at ALRP.
Beth.
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
Steven.
Steven Nicholson, State Office of AIDS, filling in for Nikki Gracie from ADAP.
Thank you. Wanda?
Hi, all. Wanda Vasquez, Community Liaison from Janssen Infectious Disease and Vaccine.
Thank you. Thank you all. Did I miss anyone who's a member of public? Nope. Okay. Mark Molnar, Council Staff. Allie?
Allie Cohn, Council Staff.
Kira?
Kira, Council Staff.
Melina?
Melina Clark, Council Staff.
I don't think I see Dave. All right. Your turn. Back up bat, Thomas Noble.
All righty. So, let's go and review and approve today's agenda.
So as Thomas previously noted, this is a shorter meeting, ending at 5:30 is the target, with one agenda item beyond our various pro forma and updates.
Any changes to that to the agenda? Just kind of noting that we're not going to do a break. So we're going to try to go through the meeting straightforward just due to the fact that it's going to be shorter. So hearing no objections to that and consider the agenda approved. So review draft minutes from January.
All right, let's see here who was listed as present and who was listed as absent. Members of public, PH staff, support staff, all of our standard room. item. Barbara did a call out for participation in a survey. Our regular updates, we did a year in review, and then we had a community forum featuring our consumers of services on the council.
All right, folks, see anything that needs to be changed there? Hearing none, it's kind of hard to do on the screen, but Kira sent out the minutes prior to this meeting, so hopefully you had a chance to review them and see if there was any correction. So hearing none, let's go ahead and approve those minutes for January 24th. Move on to announcements. Any council members have announcements? I am not seeing any hands going up. Any members of the public have announcements?
Looks like Bill.
I see. Go for it, Bill.
Good evening, folks. We are a little slower this year in getting our act together around budget advocacy, but nonetheless, we are moving forward with a budget proposal that will mirror very closely some of the priorities that you have supported over the last several years. I'm gonna just briefly recount what the items are. Going to be meeting with members of the Planning Council. We're gonna be reaching out to our colleagues at Getting to Zero, and we'll be reaching out to our colleagues with the Department of Public Health to coordinate these advocacy efforts moving forward. But I wanted to let you know what our priorities are for this year. So of course, the number one priority is to backfill any federal cuts that we receive. We wanna push for another cost of doing business increase for grant funded contracts. We wanna make sure that there's not a dislocation of services with the new prevention RFP, which we're still waiting on from DPH. We're going to continue to push for additional housing subsidies for people living with HIV. We're gonna continue to push for expanded mental health services for long-term survivors. And we're gonna continue to push for full funding for overdose prevention services in the next city budget. So I look forward to working with you all as we move into the budget season. We're hopeful that the city isn't looking at any service reductions this year. So there may be an opportunity for us to expand some of the services that we care deeply about. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Any other public announcements? Or comments, I should say. Great, hearing none. Staff announcements, Mark?
Yes, one staff announcement. You should all have received my ask for your proof of vaccination. This is mandated for all San Francisco community bodies by the mayor's office. So please, at your earliest convenience, send me that. The initial email that I sent out made clear you can send me either a photo copy of the actual vaccination card, or you can use that state portal, which will give you a QR code as well as your name. It looks like Melina also has an announcement.
Thanks, Mark. I just wanted to remind folks to fill out your 700 forms if you haven't already. They are due now in 1 month. So please be sure to submit that to avoid any fines. And you can let me know if you have any questions.
And not to put him on the spot, but I think Jack had an announcement as well.
I do have an announcement. Today is going to be my last council meeting. I am undergoing a career transition. I'm going to move away from doing social service related work and going to move towards doing things that are more creative in a different sort of way. This is creative too, but creative in a different way. And so I'm leaving my position at Huckleberry, and I thought this might also be an appropriate time for me to step back from my role on the council. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I officially was brought onto the council in 2007. So this is my 15th year as part of the council. I joined originally the Prevention Planning Council and was part of the transition to the combined council. And it's been such an amazing experience. I've learned so much and met so many amazing colleagues. And I feel like the work that we've done over the 15 years that I've been here has just touched the lives of so many people. And I'm just so proud of the work that y'all are doing and that we've been doing and that y'all are going to continue to do. And if my path leads me back in this direction, I hope to be able to join again in the future. And until then, I really appreciate and care for all of you. And I really thank you all so much for letting me spend this time with you.
Awesome. Yeah, there's been lots of emojis and reactions, and the chat is full of love. So it has been a journey, right? I was going to ask how long you've been around, but 2007 seems recent to me. What is wrong with me? 15 years ago, damn. I'm terrible with time. Don't judge me, Mark. I have one postmark.
Jack, I'd just like to also just personally convey my gratitude for the amount of time you've spent on the prevention and then the merged council. In many ways, you were my... you create a lot of my first impressions of the Prevention Council. Since you're such an outspoken fellow, in a good way, in a very good way. So I am, I'm sad to see you go. I'm excited that you're going to see some new frontiers, but you have just been a really such an important member of both councils. So thank you so much for your service. It's been fantastic, William.
Yeah, you were always willing to say the stuff that was not popular to say, so I always appreciated that about you. And that is not a backhanded compliment, that is a forward compliment, so sweet. All right, thank you for sharing that. Best wish, stay in touch. All right, let's go ahead. Any other announcements before we... Not seeing any, great.
Actually, I do have an announcement as well.
Go ahead, Mr. Mapp.
One, I rarely got to see you, Jackson, this round around. I'm going to miss you already. But I also want to announce, if you guys haven't already heard, there's an upcoming rally on March 21st. It's a Back to HIV rally. It's being put together by the folks with the... that's part of the HIV caucus of the Harvey Milk Democratic Club. And I think...
Derek, you broke up there for a second.
Monday 21st, at the City Hall. I'm sorry?
You're coming through choppy. Can you wind up, go back 60 seconds and say whatever you said in the last 60 seconds again?
Sure. It's being held at City Hall March the 21st at 11 o'clock. There's a flyer that I had given to Kara. A couple of the guys are going to come to the community engagement meeting to sort of talk about the concerns that they have in terms of why they are setting up the Back to HIV rally. But we can send the flyer out to the council otherwise.
Great, thank you for that. All right, seeing no other announcements, let's go ahead and go on to general updates. Is Lee in the mix?
Hi, Lee is here, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the real quick CARE Coalition update on appropriations. I'm going to read a brief paragraph from NASSTAT that came out today. On February 17th, the Senate passed the House-approved continuing resolution, which successfully averted a federal shutdown by extending current federal funding levels through March 11th. This new CR will buy appropriators more time to build upon their bipartisan top-line appropriation agreement and finalize an omnibus spending package. A little bit of behind-the-scenes information here. Senate Republicans threatened to block the CR, citing opposition to certain harm reduction services in the Biden administration's first-ever federal harm reduction grant program and other pandemic-related policy issues. Republican senators did not introduce an amendment targeting the harm reduction grants, and other pandemic-related amendments did not receive enough votes to pass, so all of that kind of failed. NASA is working in coalition to ensure that Congress protects harm reduction services in the federal 2022 spending package and advocate for the removal of prohibition on federal funds to purchase syringes and other safe consumption supplies. So that's it from the appropriators front. Bill, would you like to talk about any other CARE Coalition updates?
I'm assuming you're referencing Mr. Bloom?
Yes, where is he?
I wonder if he dropped off.
Let's see. You know, he might have. I don't see him here anymore.
Yeah, I don't see him on here. I can text and see if he can rejoin because he might be doing the HIV health services update soon. So we'll
update yeah. soon. Maybe we could get back to him just to move the agenda along. I'll leave that up to you, Thomas.
I appreciate that. I was just checking the COs has got updates for us. So Richard, would you mind going next? For ending the epidemic?
Okay, thank you, Thomas. Hi everyone, Richard here. And we had an ETE steering committee meeting on the 16th of this month. And since we're just a month or so back from the new year, we just were tightening things up, so to speak, for the group. So we discussed who we are, the organization's chart. We went over CDC ETE funding, which is, we talked about the San Francisco Award. We discussed comprehensive strategies, expanding community grantees, our overall scope, just was intergroup, prevention funding agencies, reaching varied populations. We also had a quick discussion on community engagement funding, with CAP, community advisory process agencies. Also, we discussed DPH HIV health services, city-funded SFP DPH, and community agencies. We also had a Getting to Zero presentation by Courtney Levy. Next month, we'll be getting presentation by Mary Shield of UCSF. And a side note here, Mark is going to put a link in the chat for the registration for this, but from March through June, Facente Consulting, who's handling Chile, for the ETEs is going to be hosting multiple opportunities for community engagement with as many diverse groups and stakeholders as possible, including surveys, virtual and in-person listening sessions, and a statewide town hall. So the first event will be a statewide town hall that will be held virtually on March 18th. That's from noon to 2 p.m., March 18th. So in line with that, council members, if you're able, are encouraged to attend. Facente Consulting will then be on our agenda for our next full council meeting, March 28th, to follow up on that. So like I said, Mark has posted the link to register for that town hall. That'll be on the 18th of March. And if you go, then you can follow up. Shelley Facente will be here in our next council meeting on the 28th of March. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Richard. You are always on top of it. Bill, I see you rejoined us, but we'll give you a second to orientate yourself, and then we're going to, and then if we could ask you to do, Lee was wondering if you had any CARE Coalition updates along with the your usual updates. So is there anybody from the state here? Chris?
Hi there, Chris Kent.
I hope everybody got a chance to look at February's issue of the OA Voice. There are some updates in there. I'll let the ADAP representative share ADAP updates. I don't have any real specific ones for non-ADAP things. I was going to share a little bit about the what you just heard about, which was the integrated statewide plan. But yeah, you know, you've got the information about the March 18th town hall, and we're very excited about it. So that's about it.
Excellent, appreciate that. Is there anyone here for ADAP?
Yeah, this is Steve Nicholson here, filling in for Nikki Gracie.
Great, go for it, Steve.
Thank you, quick update. So currently there are just over 26,000 clients enrolled in ADAP and 4,500 clients enrolled in PrEP. A couple of program updates. Recently eliminated the 6-month self-verification requirement. So eligibility for clients will be extended for 1 year going forward. In addition to that, ADAP is expanding coverage for the coverage of Cabinuva. Still working on covering the full administrative cost of that. And then lastly, PrEP app recently launched PrEP and PEP temporary coverage, allowing clients to obtain 30 days of PEP or PrEP medication that's included on the formulary. And that's just about it from ADAP.
Sounds good. Appreciate that, Stephen. Thank you. Mr. Bloom, are you?
Yes. Can you hear me?
You can.
Okay.
Nice hair.
For one quick second. Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. So yes, for the CARE Coalition update, first of all, apologies, I had to step off an emergency call. So I did hear Lee's presentation. I'm sure it was well done. I don't know if Lee mentioned about the strategic retreat. Lee, did you mention that?
No, I didn't. I just gave appropriations update.
Okay, great. So just so we're going to be holding a 3-year strategic retreat in June, the focus is going to be on kind of adopting new uses of technology, as well as revisiting our mission statement with a focus on parity, inclusion, and representation. We're hoping to recruit a number of newer, younger members from communities disproportionately impacted by HIV and AIDS. We are at older members. We are mostly in advanced middle age, so kind of a need to get some new folks in there with interest in at different points in their career that are interested in doing advocacy work. So if there aren't any questions, I'll transition over to give the report. And I'm guessing, Mark, that Kevin wasn't able to send it to you before he went on leave. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so I will send it at the close of the meeting. I'll send you the written update so you can share with the team. But I will read it, the update. So in terms of COVID-19, from February 10th, the total number of COVID-19 cases was down to 299. That's a 7-day rolling average, which was down from 1,524 the previous month. So you can see really gone down to a seventh of what it was, or rather a fifth of what it was before. The number also of the same date, the number of COVID-19 hospitalizations was 161, a reduction from 261 the previous month, January. As of January 22nd, 2022, the percentage of San Francisco residents that have completed the vaccination series, meaning a minimum of 2, unless they did the Johnson one-on-one, what it done is 83%, and it's a slight tick up from 82% from the previous month. In terms of quality management trainings, we held real-world challenges of harm reduction, realities, tensions, and collisions. two sessions on that on the 4th of February and on the 18th. More than 50 people registered for the training. The focus on that was principles of harm reduction and operating in a sober living environment are some examples of what was covered. In terms of general administrative and community updates, as we previously reported, we're still in a holding pattern for both Ryan White Part A, Ryan White Part A, MAI, and EHE funds. We likely won't know till the start of the fiscal year. We did receive the partial Part A award for both the formula and for the MAI pieces, as well as a partial EHE award. But we really don't have a sense of what the final award is based on this partial award. So hopefully we'll get the budget approved at the federal level and get that award shortly thereafter. For those of you that are newer, we do continue to operate. We assume a flat funding scenario, and all of our providers are well-versed in this, so we don't anticipate any interruption of services. We do continue to be activated, our staff. There were three of us that were activated for the Tenderloin Linkage Center, the emergency response that the mayor named. And we had another person who just deactivated from part-time COVID activation. So hopefully soon we'll be back again to a fuller staff, but we are a little bit more resembling what CHEP does with many fewer people. In terms of new hires, we are still waiting for what's called a program coordinator position for EHE, as well as to backfill from Joseph's retirement, Joseph Chechere. Just to touch again in terms of the HRSA policy clarification notice, those are notices that the HIV AIDS Bureau sends out to us to give further instruction in terms of how services are run. So they sent out both a policy notification as well as a clarification letter that local health jurisdictions, that being us, San Francisco Public Health, were able to conduct the yearly rather than the 6 months for Ryan White eligibility certification. And I know that we shared that with you in the past months, but we've now begun a process to get community input to implement this guidance. So we'll be reaching out to a number of community organizations, particularly those that do enrollment and provide the services. Finally, all of the contracts funded with Ryan White's Part A, B, and C have been modified to add the cost of doing business. So again, wanna give a shout out and thanks to Happen for their work and advocacy to make that happen, to support our service providers. That work having been done, of course, with the Board of Supervisors and the mayor. So that's all that I have. If people have any questions, happy to take them.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for stepping in. Any questions for Bill? All right, hearing none, I'll give a CHEP update and the state CPG update. So with regards to CHEP, Bill kind of alluded to it, we are still down. I want to say 40 to 50% of our staff. HR is going through a significant process of trying to hire folks and bring folks on board. So anybody familiar with DPH is pretty well aware of the pain points that are going on there. I've definitely had a couple recs that have been open for a couple of years. So, but we are still functioning and we're still showing up. So Gwen, when you say you're tired, we are right there with you. So, We had our RFP process. We started that a couple years ago, put out for requests, funded, scored the RFP process, and award letters actually went out to those who were successful last week. So that will be a significant, it's just a good line in the sand with regards to us and kind of an indicator that we are kind of coming out of COVID. We did a planet training last week for HIV test counselors. So that is up and running, and sites are continuing to onboard new staff as things start to continue to defrost. And a lot of the CHEP staff are currently engaged in the linkage center, which is part of the Tenderloin Health or Tenderloin response, emergency response put forth by the mayor. So, that work continues. Any questions on any of those before I proceed on to the state updates? All right, so the state CPG is going well. So two significant things is I'm on the aging and HIV work group, and we are putting together a brief survey to get input from people living with HIV in the state of California over the age of 50 to figure out what kind of barriers they have come in contact with trying to access healthcare. So within that, it's gonna be a short little 6-question survey. And what we wanna do is we'll take those findings, figure out what the top red tape kind of moments are, and then put together a response to addressing those. So whether it be a info sheet with regards to how to get around those particular barriers, and then we're also hoping to actually put a webinar on so people can ask questions on how to address that. So that is the mission for that particular work group. And so it's going really well. I'm pretty proud to be part of that group. I've also been attending the meth group that they recently formed. They've had 2 meetings. So they're looking at the correlation between meth use and HIV acquisition and prioritizing that. So there is not a first group, there were a lot of people. And then the second meeting, there was not many people. So if people are interested in maybe attending that and giving it some energy, that would be great. San Francisco is actually relatively well represented in the small amount of folks that are already showing up. But I figure anybody on this particular call would probably have a lot of expertise that the rest of the state of California could benefit with regards to looking at how to address and support people who are actively using meth. Any questions on that? All right, seeing none. Let's go ahead and go on to, did I miss any updates? Did I get everybody? I think I'm good. Great. So let's go ahead and membership. So we have a membership renewal for one particular member.
Richard Sullivan, we have an agenda on the floor from membership to renew Richard's membership if the council members so desire. And so it's on the floor, doesn't need to be moved or seconded. Let me no longer hide non-video participants. Second, so I could see all of your names at least. Are there any objections to approving Richard Sullivan's renewal?
Richard, we usually ask folks if you give you the option of stepping out of the room to see the he turned off his camera. Thanks, Rich. Probably turned down his volume too. I'm kidding, Richard.
Yeah, he should mute everything.
All right, no objections. Looks like your renewal has been approved. Good luck, Richard.
Would you like to say anything, Richard?
Yeah, real quick. Thank you. I'm looking at my notice of appointment here. It was from December 2019, and this is really important for me to be on this council. It's part of the foundation I built in my life of recovery. And I've gone, you know, this has opened a lot of doors for me. And needless to say, I learned a lot from every one of you, every group. And people have gave me nudges and had me join community engagement and steering committees and some other Shanti opportunities. It's just been a real pleasure. I look forward to a long service. Thank you, everyone.
Awesome, Richard. It has been a pleasure having you on the council. Watching your growth over the last few years. So, all right. So I think that's it. So on to the presentation that I put together. So I'm going to screen share. Okay, so let's go to slideshow. How does that look? Folks can see it okay? Excellent.
Yeah, it looks good.
Mark, if you could do me a favor and just help keep an eye on hands and that kind of thing, just as I'm speaking, that would be awesome.
Sure. I mean, should we maybe keep questions for the end? Usually it's a little bit more organized that way than having to stop and start.
Yeah. How do we, there we go. So how do I get rid of the toolbar? Okay. So what I wanted to do is just spend a little bit of time talking about my particular activation process with COVID and the energy and the lessons. And there's no doubt in my mind that the city and county of San Francisco, a lot of our successes with COVID came from our HIV world. I don't know. I feel a little hesitant to saying that just due to the fact that we were, it's hard to prove, for lack of a better word, but at the same time, just kind of living and going through the process of the HIV epidemic in the early years and then what happened with COVID, there was just so much crossover and so much success with regards to why the city and county did so well with regards to the energy of the people that worked at the DPH and also the community members that we truly did engage. So how did SF contribute to, you know, the SF HIV providers and community members contribute to the COVID experience and COVID response? So just to be clear, this is my perspective, and this is not really, I'm hoping that it's reflective of many other people who are engaged in the process, but I'm sure there are many other stories and many other things that kind of would be representative. So I'll stop there. So some of the general themes that I saw that just with regards to staffing, expertise, I realized I didn't spell check this, but there were a lot of expertise. The work was mission driven. There was a lot of community partnership and there was a lot of community planning throughout the whole process. So this is the email that you get when you get activated. So when you become a Department of Public Health employee, on the back of your name badge, there's this little text that says you are a DSW, so disasters service worker. And so basically, if there is a disaster in the city and county of San Francisco, that you will respond, you will show up, and you will basically have a new job instantaneously, I feel like it. And during COVID, you get the email Monday and or Friday, and you have a new job the next Monday morning. And that's all there is to it. There's not a lot of negotiation in it, and you just report. And at a time when we really didn't know what that meant, it was pretty terrifying. And the work that I did, I feel probably about 100, 150 people were reporting to me at one point, and people would get activated and they would show up in tears because they were scared to leave their house. They were scared to walk out the door. They didn't know what they were stepping into. And it was a pretty terrifying experience on multiple levels. So, it creates a level of confusion that is just intense, and I can't minimize that. So just some of the people that I could think off the top of my head that were activated, that were doing HIV work, if I forget to put Eileen Lochran's last name on there. But just these are just some of the folks that I worked with that were doing COVID work and got activated over the last couple of years to kind of pivot to the they got that activation notice and they basically had to find themselves in a new position doing something very new and different. In the end, there were hundreds of us at some point. So it was intense. So one of the things that I kind of saw as a general theme that kind of came from early HIV years was just this constant change status. So every so many, I remember very clearly trying to go into work one day, and it was the third day, and I was really feeling good about the fact that I knew what I was walking into for the first time in months, because every other day that I showed up to work, it was something new. It was something new. It was something new. And so, and on that third day, I was walking in, I actually slept well, and things changed. It was like catastrophic. And so we just kept using this expression, like we were trying to provide service at the same time plan for service. And it was just a constant state of tension around that. So thought I'd be quite clever and actually just use the DPH. So this data with regards to is available online. It's pretty intense. And so what was happening, and we did really well with regards to the beginning of the epidemic and trying to keep the numbers low. Prior to there being a vaccine, we basically had two significant tools in our outreach. Our was testing and case investigation and contact tracing. So I got activated to the case investigation and contact tracing world. And this, each of these spikes, I can really tell you like specifically what was going on. And you can see how, especially here in July, we just thought we were out of it. And then all of a sudden we found ourselves not out of it. And so that roller coaster of kind of intense drama that was basically being trauma, I should probably be a better word, was experienced by the whole team. Not sure what I did there. One sec. Oh, I know what happened. It's basically I used that link and it kind of pulled me out of it. So pre-COVID, so what happened basically is community-based organizations pre-COVID, the work that was happening within CHEP, we were funding folks to do over 25,000 tests. The community-based organizations that we had partnerships and contracts with were basically experts working with community. They focused on various populations that had disparities with regards to HIV, Hep C, and STDs. They had trusted relationships with community-based partners and with community as a whole. And we basically were a non-remote culture, right? So the fact that we were all still kind of reporting into work, and the messaging at the time was to stay home. And I always kind of appreciated this little logo just due to the fact that the characters in the center of it were relatively gender neutral. And I was like, okay, that is definitely how San Francisco rolled it out. So during the case investigation process, what would happen is somebody would test positive for COVID. We would get their phone number. We would outreach to them. We would give them health information. Kind of, we'd probably spend about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes on the phone with somebody on average, just talking to them on what COVID was. Sometimes we actually had to give them the results because we got a hold of them sooner than their provider did. Talk to them about how long they actually needed to quarantine for or isolate for. Talk to them about partners or people in their lives that may need to get tested. And then we provided them with either hotel, food delivery, or whatever other services they might need in order to safely isolate. And then as vaccines kind of came in to the picture, we were able to offer them that referrals process. So, and if you think about it, a small group of people basically did this for over 50,000 San Franciscans in a very short period of time, in about 18 months time. So a small team of people just basically was invited into over 50,000 people in the city and county of San Francisco's homes in a moment where they were in crisis and had some level of they were just confused on where they needed to go and what they needed to do next, and basically were scared. So when we first started, we actually started in at 25 NS in the conference room downstairs. And then This was the work environment over at 25th Street. So we were basically good old fashioned telephones, sitting next to each other wearing masks that were frustrating to us. And you can actually see Darvin on the right there. So what would happen basically is I would listen to all of these phone calls because this space was not that big. And so when people would call in, you could actually you just felt what they were, the service that they were delivering and the impact that it was having on the person on the other end. There was a lot of care that came out of this small space from this small team. There's Hyman Scott and Trang, who is one of our Epi folks. So this was the space right next to us. And this is where the clinicians would actually do consultation for people who had questions. So why did we engage the community-based organizations? So what we did is we basically saw a surge. We were completely overwhelmed, and about 50% of the people that were actually acquiring COVID at the time were actually monolingual Spanish speaking. So if you think about the disparity among that particular population, it was pretty traumatic. And so when somebody was working with somebody who was, if they were English speaking only, and they were working with somebody who was Spanish speaking, we would have to use a translator. And then it doubled the time that it took to actually provide the service. And then we lost the cultural nuance with regards to being able to be culturally sensitive when we actually went through the translation service. And so what I started to notice was the fact that we had trained so many community partners to do the skills on the left. And then the skills needed on the right were basically the case investigators and contact tracers. So they're basically a pretty similar skill set. So had the idea of basically taking the community-based partners that were funded to do HIV testing and could not do it and see if they could onboard with us as case investigators. And so we managed to do that for over about 100 staff from community-based organizations. And a significant number of those folks were actually monolingual Spanish-speaking individuals. So we worked with Meta and Dolores Street, which are two CBOs in the Mission. And many of those staff were actually day laborers prior to actually being onboarded with regards to being case investigators with us. So we were able to stand up a training. The training process to become a case investigator with us was about 6 weeks. So it was not a small effort. So it was pretty intense. And I always tell people my phlebotomy training was much more complicated. And so not only were we working with community partners that didn't really, it was just a completely new skill set that they needed to change into, but we were doing it in a language that was not English. So yeah. So this was 12:30 on the 9th from the balcony at Moscone. So I think most folks know what was going on with regards to the fires. So I started cycling into Moscone in the morning and the sky was relatively clear. And as the day just started to go on, it just started to get darker and darker. And so within, you know, all of this trying to stand up a case investigation, work with community members to help support other community members, we had so many other things happening within the space that it was just, it was really, 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 I can't say how intense it was. So either people were testing positive for COVID themselves, on the team, they were having family members who were getting either sick or passing away. We were working 60-hour work weeks. One of the staff or basically reached out to somebody was saying, asking them how, you know, basically said, hey, I'm looking for this person. And the person on the other end of the line said, you know, is this a joke? And she said, what do you mean? She said, the person you're trying to reach just passed away. And I am her daughter. And you could just sense the grief that the person was experiencing and the fact that the investigator did a really good job of just sitting on the phone with that person for about an hour and a half, kind of talking through and offering grief counseling. And a lot of that, yeah. And so, and she basically at the end of the call was like, you know, they told me to not go get my mother's cat because the cat might give me COVID. And So the person was really struggling with whether or not they should go get their mother's cat. And at the time, we didn't know whether or not pets could actually transmit it. So yeah, it was intense. And so the person actually called back a few days later, and I happened to pick up the phone and I just told her to go get the cat. It was just one of those moments where I'm like, it feels like the right thing to do. But I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't feel 100% secure of the fact that the person, you know, we just didn't know whether or not something was happening there. So also too, just, I remember just kind of being there and we were also worried about infecting each other or getting, you know, and just having to show up for work. And one of my coworkers was pretty far along pregnancy. And I just thought, this must be really intense for you because I'm feeling it. I can't imagine being pregnant and kind of going through all of this. So as we folded in the DP, the workforce with the CBOs, the way this looked is we actually had daily meetings and huddles with folks. So community partners that we used to fund and I would see maybe once or twice a year, I now was seeing multiple times in meetings trying to organize the work. So they literally became city employees or I became a CBO employee. So it was no longer this line between community between DPH and community, it really got blurred. Same time with managing to actually still help people get certified to be an HIV test counselor. So still had my foot kind of in the space and I tried to attend as many of these meetings as possible. And then at the same time, actually working, these are some of the Mission Neighborhood folks, helping them learn how to run the COVID rapid test at the same time. So there was definitely a lot of correlation to the fact that so many of our partners knew how to run a rapid point of care test. And then so the adoption of the COVID test was not a very far stretch for them. I do feel a little self-conscious of this picture, but it's my office mate's like, who is that? And I'm like, that is me. I was more fascinated with the fact that my hair, the light was coming through my hair. But I thought that picture really kind of tells kind of the stress that we were all under and that we just were under and it sustained it. So at the same time, I met some incredible staff. Just like we went through something. I'll definitely say that. So yeah, these are community partners, DSC, yeah, other city employees, bunch of librarians stepped up, tax folks, everybody kind of chipped in. And this was that little moment in July where we kind of thought it was all over. Obviously it wasn't, but it was intense. These are a lot of the Spanish speaking folks, the promotoras from Mission Neighborhood. And yeah, they stepped up and they stepped up hard. I can really tell they would show up every meeting, they'd have their notebooks out. You could see their kids crawling on them. And they were there and they were making the phone calls and it was intense. So a future state. So what happened basically is started to look at this particular model and it's like, okay, if we could do this same thing for other health disparities, why don't we? So what is it about if we actually actively reach out to people who are in need, provide them services, why wouldn't we? So if we could do this for COVID, why couldn't we do this for cancer diagnosis? Or why couldn't we do this for an STD treatment or something else along those lines? Because literally what we started to, you know, the disparity with regards to who was going without within the city and county of San Francisco was, it became very apparent to the team just due to the fact that we were calling thousands of people. We could easily see the kind of pattern that was coming through there. And so what we want to do moving forward is kind of build on those successes kind of from the HIV world and the COVID world and start to pull together a network where we can actually facilitate the process of people accessing services in the city and county of San Francisco and reducing the barrier to making that happen. And the way that we would do that is actually actively call them versus having somebody call a CBO, because usually the way a referral process works now is that you
you get a list of places you call, and then it's up to the client's responsibility to kind of make that happen. But if we could actually link them with somebody and have somebody call them and say, hey, my name's Thomas Noble, I'm reaching out to you to see what kind of services you need, get your name and number, provide that information to the CBO, and then ask the CBO to call them within 72 hours to meet those needs. So that is the future state of what we want to do with regards to kind of the success of the case investigation and contact tracing team that we experienced that we had in the city and county of San Francisco. So leadership, so Grant sent out this email a little while ago kind of saying a very similar thing. It's like from the standpoint of COVID, it's like, how do we live with it, but at the same time prevent people from dying? And part of the way that we're gonna do that is basically trying to address the cofactors that impact people living with, people who get COVID and the likelihood of them passing away or having bad health outcomes. If we can address things like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, stroke, then we'll have more success. If we address those cofactors, then less people will actually die of COVID. So some of the needs that we uncovered was mental health, stigma, immigration issues, medical distrust. There are a lot of resources in the city and county of San Francisco, but people struggle to find them. If anything, so what we're thinking basically is the concept of kind of bringing a little bit of the CBO experience into the clinics, and then the vice versa, bringing some of the clinical services into the CBOs. So, and the network will allow this to happen. If you think about it, someone's got a need, they kind of come into the system, we talk to them, triage them, and then have somebody from our network of providers reach out to them and provide them that service. We're looking at a process where we're going to build kind of neighborhood hubs. And so this would be an example of the Bayview and some of the CBOs that are in the mix, and then creating other hubs and then pulling those hubs together. And then eventually creating a citywide network where people could actually access services across these hubs with the assistance of somebody with the either at a CBO or from the DPH. Various roles that we kind of mapped out with regards to what the DPH's role would be in this, and then the CBO's role. Obviously, the DPH would kind of have to hold a larger structure, and then the CBO folks would help us provide the services. Another thing that we kind of acknowledged that we needed to do is basically make sure that we had the free training available to community-based partners that wanted it. So we are, Richard's mentioned a little bit this with regards to Chile. And we're also funding the San Francisco AIDS Foundation to do this academy work. And this work will help stand up the network. So when people bring on new staff, or if it's actually a partner that's not used to the values of harm reduction, SOGI, motivational interviewing, things along those lines, that we can actually make sure that we can train them up to do those services and the quality in the way that we want it to be done. So a lot of what's kind of motivating this is just the success that we've had with HIV linkage to care. So from part of me was just kind of seeing over the last couple of years, it's like, okay, why is it so much easier to link somebody with HIV to care than it is somebody with diabetes? And why is that? Why is there such a struggle there? And so kind of calling that out and saying there should be equity all the way along the board with regards to what your health issue is and what how much TLC you get in accessing services. So kind of building on the success of the HIV model, why don't we push that out to more folks? So part of the idea is basically as COVID ramps down, we're going to ramp up these other processes. We're doing a small pilot with diabetes in the Mission with a couple of our partners, and it's going really, 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 really well. So people who for some reason knew that they were diabetic, but didn't walk through the doors of a clinic, we are kind of adding extra TLC using a promotodas model and having a lot of success at getting people to access additional services. So our next steps are basically to work with community-based partners to kind of build this model out. The fact that the announcement that I made earlier, the new CHEP RFPs,
are going to go into place, and that the award letters have gone out. We'd like to pull them into this network process, along with we have some funds from a CDC disparity study that we'd like to use as well to kind of help build this structure. So just to, I forgot I put this in there, it caught me off guard a little bit. But my sister-in-law passed away the day after Christmas, 2020, due to COVID. So it really kind of, acknowledging what, the lessons learned from HIV those of us impacted, transfer over to COVID, just due to the fact that COVID really impacted a lot of us on a personal level as well. Sorry, I really didn't think I'd get this choked up. She left three children, and her oldest son just came out to me and my partner. And one of the losses was the fact that he couldn't, you know, he didn't come out to her before she passed. She really wasn't that old either. So I just really kind of concerned me with regards to, sorry, I'll stop rambling at this point, but go on. So questions. This is a cameo of a famous dog that some of you may know, but I've had the pleasure of walking this little guy for a while during the pandemic. And so I thought it would be a good uplifter with regards to the presentation. So Leah, so you got a question?
Another question, just a comment. Thank you so much for this. It's kind of unusual for government to kind of look back in many ways to look at the lessons learned. So I appreciate the personal perspective, and I'm sorry for your loss. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lee. I appreciate that. I think I pulled out of it. Let me see if I can stop screen sharing at this point. Other questions?
Looks like there's a question from Ben in the chat. I'll read it out loud. How do you see the hub concept in a relationship with the CHEP health access point model for integrated prevention? At a surface glance, one is neighborhood based and the other is population focused. He loves both.
Yeah. I don't know, Ben, to tell you the truth. We're gonna have to figure that out just due to the fact that I think what COVID kind of showed us was that there was a lot of value in neighborhood-based processes. And so, getting people to kind of encourage them to seek services within their neighborhood so they didn't have to walk too far. Vaccinations, for example, was really successful. So we haven't figured that out yet. Hopefully we'll get there, kind of engaging the community and trying to figure out what that would look like. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, I wanted to take a minute. Eileen Lochran actually shared a couple of these 8 slides with me with regards to the harm reduction process and overdose in the shelter in place. And I wanted to, these were another kind of success with regards to the COVID work and how the harm reduction movement kind of had an opportunity to step forward. Hey, Derek.
Thomas, before you go into that, it looks like Derek has a question.
Just really quick one, and actually I put it in the chat and I didn't, I was hoping that it wouldn't get lost. I noticed that the Health Academy was more focused on community-based organization sort of employees, but was there any consideration in doing neighborhood-based health ed for community members themselves in raising health literacy? Or will that be sort of, that would be much more the purview of the community partners?
I mean, so what the intention of the Academy is, Derek, is what I noticed when we were doing, so COVID kind of pushed us into a space to working with a lot, pushed me, let me say that, working with partners that I had not worked with before. And so a lot of those partners were within OMI and the Bayview and Sunnydale, and realized that a lot of these partners have training programs. They have a lot of amazing services already out there. And so part of the mission of the Academy for the most part is actually to pull together those resources and not duplicate them. So almost if there is somebody in the community that has a certain wisdom or perspective on something that would make a good content for a training, that the Academy's role would be to host that, set up the websites, kind of promote it. And for lack of a better word, the person from the community-based organization or the community would be the talent, and they would show up and do the training, and then the Academy could kind of support them through that infrastructure. So your question, I can easily see that that would not be hard to set up the similar process for a community interaction place, community engagement up moment. Does that make sense, Derek?
It does. I think I had read the Health Academy in the wrong way. I thought it was much more care navigating and coordinating through the systems as opposed to actual health education. So thanks for that clarification.
No problem. All right, seeing no other questions. So Eileen basically put together these slides. So the safe, the SIP hotels, the shelter in place, was the effort to actually take a lot of the hotels that were in the city and county of San Francisco that were not being, and to use them to house people who were marginally housed or needed housing during COVID. And so in these spaces, the DOPE project helped us basically kind of get these supplies into the hotels so people could actually access these, equipment without actually having to engage anybody. So it was amazing. They would just set these tables up, put the supplies out there. People could help themselves. They could drop off things that they had used. And it was pretty powerful how quickly it took it took hold. And we had a lot of success because a lot of kind of prior to COVID, there would be a relatively degree of pushback with regards to just putting supplies on a table and allowing people to help themselves, basically. So they did some promotional materials to make sure that their Narcan was, they knew that overdose prevention was kind of pulled into that space as well. So I just wanted to make sure that I kind of noted that there were other things that were happening and the success of the overdose work. A lot of people overdosed in the city and county of San Francisco during the time of COVID. And so, but a lot fewer did due to the fact that the work Eileen did and a lot of folks within the community. All right, so I'll see if I can stop the screen share. Other questions? All right, am I still sharing?
Uh-huh,
yes.
Yep.
Who can share, host only? All right. Well, I'll just cheat and do this. How's that? All right. If there are no other questions, I think we can adjourn. Am I missing anything?
No, if you're finished, you're finished. Thank you again, Thomas, for this presentation, for sharing your very personal experience during this really messed up time period. And thank you again to Jackson for being such a strong and ongoing member of the Planning Council.
Bye, Jackson. Thank you. All right. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next month, if not sooner.
Bye. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Be care. Well.
Bye, everyone.